The sound of some Egyptian students earlier this week holding a sit-in at the University of Cairo's journalism school. The dean, they claim, is a remnant of the Mubarak regime. They say they want him to step down. And as with many other revolutions, the Egyptian uprising has really transformed society, notably the press. It was, for decades, it was under control of the state. All that is now gone, or we hope so, anyway. On the line from Cairo, where she's reporting for WNYC's On the Media, we have the host and managing editor, Brooke Gladstone. Hi, Brooke.
Hi.
All right, so let's first remind people exactly how the press operated while Mubarak was still in power.
Sure. And, you know, it's interesting. I'm glad you played that bit of tape, because when we were there, we noticed that, you know, as some have observed, the same kind of corruption and bullying that characterized the regime also characterized all the institutions all the way down. And the students, are right to claim that their dean was a tool of Mubarak. He actually wrote speeches for Mubarak. He was actively engaged with Mubarak, and it wasn't a secret. So, they know whereof they speak there. In terms of the media in general, generally it fell into three kinds: the state kind, the state-run media, party-run media, and media run by individuals. Obviously, the most influential, or rather the most widespread, was the state-run media. Whether it was the most influential is another question. And we could start really in 67, when the state-run television channel announced solemnly that the Egyptian forces were engaged in a great victory during the Six-Day War. Of course, it came down to an ignominious defeat for Egypt, and that was a very rude awakening for the Egyptian people. So I think at that point the trust eroded strongly, and it's been eroding ever since, culminating with a ridiculous picture that was doctored in the once mighty Al-Ahram newspaper, which showed Mubarak leading peace talks when actually he was lagging behind the 82-year-old former leader of Egypt.
And we have a quote here from journalist Khaled Dawood. Here's what he had to say about the Al-Ahram newspaper that you're mentioning, and he's talking about the newspaper under the Mubarak regime.
I was not ready to come back to Egypt under the old circumstances. And I think any Egyptian who's seen the Al-Ahram newspaper one day or 2 days before the fall of Mubarak with a headline saying millions go out in support of Mubarak while totally ignoring Tahrir Square would not be encouraged at all to come and work under those circumstances, because this was basically big lie, you know, and I didn't want to be part of feeding the readers lies, as the case was before Mubarak's fall.
Well, since you spoke to him in Cairo, I assume he changed his mind and went back to Egypt now. Does that mean that the newspapers have changed under the new government?
That's a very complicated question. which was founded in 1875, was described in 1950 by the Middle East Institute as what the London Times is to Englishmen and the New York Times is to Americans. That has long not been the case. As we heard Khaled Dawood say, he spent all those years in New York for Al-Ahram partly because he didn't want to be in the mess that the newspaper had become. But that doesn't mean that things have definitively changed. The management is mostly the same, although they have replaced the people at the top. At the very top, there is a new editor at Al-Ahram. But that doesn't necessarily mean things are going to change. There were red lines before, that is to say, you couldn't talk about Mubarak and his family, except in the most glowing terms. You couldn't talk about corruption. Now you can talk about all those things. You can start writing the draft of the first draft of history of the Mubarak years inside Egypt. But there still is a red line, and it goes around the military, the only standing institution in Egypt, the only power that really matters, and there would not be any reporting about the military, even Dawood told me that, in the Al-Ahram paper, although it might be in the online version, because the online version of things around here is a world apart from the paper ones.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. First, this comment, this is you speaking with Khaled Dawood, who's the regional editor for Al-Ahram Weekly.
What's going to happen the first time you push against the red line?
My article won't get published.
All right, that's what you're talking about, that they can't get this out. But again, you say that the online version of things is very different, which kind of makes sense since this was a revolution that many people say was fueled by social media, by Facebook and Twitter and other things that happened online.
Absolutely. It began with the Cafe movement, which was the Enough movement, and then there was the April 6th movement, which was a gathering of young people and activists to support textile worker demands in a province away from Cairo. And then, having created that base, more and more young people came online, created their own channels of communication. And, there is one thing, there's an argument over, can social media create a revolution? And it's a silly question. It's not social media that does it. It's the people who do it. But there are two things that social media can do extraordinarily well. And one is disseminate information, and that is organize people. How it's used, whether it's used, that depends on the passion behind the campaign. And there's just a tremendous passion here. Beginning in Tunis, it actually began much earlier. There was a way, kind of a class in how to foment revolution. A year or two ago, the Serbs used it. It was a group called Atpor, which told you how to use advertising, how to use slogans, how to use social media, how to use humor and sarcasm to topple a regime. And the people behind this one used all those tools, refined them, and very much more.
All right, so who has more, I guess, of a readership, the blogs and the various news outlets that are available only online, or the Al-Ahram newspaper?
It's a very, very tricky question. It's one I put to a news editor who was beginning his own online paper after his leftist paper was closed down. And although he has more hits and more daily readers than the circulation of the paper he was replacing, he says that every newspaper issue, every copy is passed around five times. So he multiplies by five the paper impact.
Yeah.
However, it really depends, and this is perhaps a crude thing to say, on whether the population is politically relevant. The fact is, it is, like the rest of the region, it is a very young population. The use of the internet rose from 5 million to 15 million from 2006 to 2009. It is said that just in the last few months, another 4 million people went online. That is a powerful constituency of active, engaged people in a population of 80 million, many of whom are illiterate.
That's Brooke Gradstone, host and managing editor of WNYC's On the Media. She's speaking to us from Cairo, where she's there looking into the press, the state of the press there. Thanks so much, Brooke.
You're welcome, Celeste.